Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello Rank Squad and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC, recording live and direct straight after Barcelona's breathless 3-3 draw with Inter in the Champions League semi-final first leg. My name is Jack Collins and I will be your host today, and joining me across the water from San Diego is Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah. Oh, what a game. Yeah, not one. I've watched it on my own and I hate watching games like that on my own. I've got no, you know, I've got obviously like texting you and texting some other people, and you've got Twitter and stuff to, like, I don't even tweet, but like during games like that, I have to tweet because I can't get the feelings out. You know, Taylor's working at home, but she didn't care. Dylan came home from school 10 minutes from the end and he did care and he was gutted. He'd missed it.
You have to watch it back with him. It's one of those.
I was even chatting to ChatGPT at one point, mate.
That's too much. You can just text me, man. I will reply.
Who are they describing? Who are these words describing, Jack? Staggering, breathtaking, startling, eye-popping, enchanting, spellbinding, captivating, entrancing. Who was it?
I'd assume they were talking about Lamine Yamal.
Yeah, I think so, mate. I think so. I mean, that lad.
Talking of that exact thing and seeing it with people, right? I was watching with Luz and that was fine. But in the middle of it, I was texting a group chat I have with a couple of mates, and one of them was like, hang on, I only checked the score 7 minutes in and Inter were one up. And both me and my friend Max texted my friend James saying, mate, get to a TV. Just get to a TV. Any TV will do. You need to watch.
Well, not any TV. What's that? What channel is it on over there? Was it on Prime these days or something?
TNT Sport.
I was just
taking a look at Tom Gibbs's kind of on-the-minute match report afterwards, and he's described it as, it became one of those text your friends performances. And I was like, oh, Lord, that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. He describes Lamine Yamal as thus. He said, Yamal seemingly capable of beating opponents at will, then finding the perfect shot or cross to terrorize Jan Sommer in the Italian's goal. Federico DiMarco was as exposed as Maicon by Gareth Bale. Every time Yamal ran at his defender, you feared for him. You feared for his family, his pets, and his lucrative sponsorship deals. What an incredible writ of writing on the internet, and that deserves major credit. So shout out to.
I mean, he'd had a long time to think of that, though. Like, that had been happening since the 24th minute, so at least he had a long time to think about it.
Still, phenomenal writing.
DiMarco shouldn't have played, should he? Like, I love Fede DiMarco, but that was not the job for him. Like, there are some games that DiMarco just can't start, and I actually didn't think he would start this game for this exact reason. He got taken off after what, off the top of my head, 55 minutes or something?
Yeah.
And it was half hour too late. Like, it's just not the game for him. I love him.
Too late at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, he's brilliant, but not at this. Not at facing up to Lamine Yamal.
The thing was, I think what was so breathtaking and astonishing, without going all ChatGPT on it, about this performance was the fact that Inter did double up on him. They trebled up at him at some point. It wasn't enough. Like, he would just be like, oh, you got three men on him, Michel. All right, I'll go through them. I'll jink my way through them. I'll pretend to go one way, throw two of them off with a feint, and then hit the byline. Like, it was absolutely astounding in so many ways. And there was a moment in the first half where he basically was like facing up his man and then was like, went backwards, did a couple of backwards dribbles. Like,
he did,
Like flicked it backwards. You're like, he's taking the mick. Yeah. At one point, you know, it's got a little bit mad when there comes a point on every TNT commentary, if Rio Ferdinand is on comms,
oh, no.
He just starts shouting over stuff. And sometimes I hate it, but today I felt like he was justified in many ways.
Okay.
Because there was one point just after he'd scored where he hit the bar and he goes to the byline and screws it across and it comes off. It was a brilliant save by Jan Sommer, actually. And Rio Ferdinand just shouts over the commentary, this kid is taking liberties. And I was like, he's taking liberties on the biggest stage. And I was like, he's not wrong. Like, he's not wrong. He described it as like he was playing at Goals, which I thought was an incredibly UK-centric reference. Like,
it is, but that is how people play at Goals. But the problem is that the lads that play at Goals, and for those of you who don't know what Goals is, it's a 5-6-a-side. Yes, pick up, but it's in like a small pitch, like a 5-a-side pitch.
In a cage.
But ultimately, it's usually the case, not usually, often the case, that the lads that play like that aren't that good at 11-a-side, whereas Lamine Yamal is the best player in the world at 11-a-side. So it's not the same. Here's a question for you, Jack. Before we go deep on it all, this is a ranking podcast, mate. I want you to rank the goals. And I'm going to talk, I'll remind you of them. And then I want you to rank. You don't have to go 1 to 6 maybe, but maybe your top three. So the first goal, after 30 seconds, Thuram scores an audacious back heel, back flick, whatever you want to call it. Unbelievable. Then Dumfries scores that volley from a head down. Then Lamine changes the narrative of the game with his run into the box and a measured, guided finish into the far corner, which was better than I've just described it. The fourth goal of the night that makes it 2-2 is Ferran Torres' goal, which is just beautiful, beautifully worked.
All from Pedri.
All orchestrated by Pedri, who's built it further back in the pitch and then kind of moved things forward and seen things that nobody else in the world will ever see. That was the fourth goal. Goal 5, which really turned the night again, somewhere out of nothing, Dumfries, who was in monster mode, by the way, comes up with this big header and it's 3-2. And you're like, oh my God, Barca are playing so well and they're going to lose. And yet, I don't know, a minute later, Rafinha comes up with a strike from about 75 yards, smashes off the crossbar, smashes off someone's head and goes into the back of the net. Go on then, mate. Give it your best shot. You're 3-2-1.
I could go 6. We'll do it all.
Oh, you can go 6. Okay.
The worst goal of the lot is just the Denzel Dumfries header. Like, that's the worst goal because it's just really standard. It's still a great goal, but it's just really standard.
Okay.
Controversially, I think Rafinha's goal goes in at 5. And the reason is...
What?
No. I know that sounds ridiculous, but there's reasoning behind this. This is a goal that's going to annoy me for the next 30 years. Do you know why? Because it's gone down as a Yann Sommer own goal. Like, it can't come off the bar and hit the goalkeeper and go. It just doesn't have the same, like, that by all manner, that goal is Rafinha's and it isn't. So it has to be knocked down the list. If that goes straight in, it's number one.
I don't think it looks as good as it goes straight in. I don't think it would look as good. It was like a pinball machine. He hit it so hard, you didn't even notice at first. It had gone boom, boom, boom.
We're going to be talking about this game in like 10 years. I play a game on the radio on Sirius where we try and like name the lineups from like famous games in history. This is in there. Like, I may as well just write this one down now for like 5 years time.
God, I'll be terrible at that
about this game. But like, it's one of those where I'm going to be like, oh yeah, that was a Yann Sommer own goal, wasn't it? It didn't go down as Rafinha's goal and it's going to bug me constantly. So
I mean, it is an own goal, to be fair.
Yeah, it's the correct. Spiritually, it's incorrect. And I think that's really what matters here. So, that goes in at 5. Wow. I think Dumfries' weird bicycle goes in at 4.
Yeah.
Because Pedri should head it away, mostly. I think
that'd probably be my number 6, yeah.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Then I think it's at 3, the beautifully crafted Barcelona goal. I love it as I do. It's sensational. It's wonderful. But like, it's one of those ones where you're like, ah, just perfect. But there were just other better goals in this game. Marcus Thuram goes in at 2 because the audacity of it, as you kind of put out there, but also I think in terms of how it kind of opened this game up straight away. Like, we don't have the classic we've just had unless Inter score the first goal so early on, because it riles the crowd up. It riles the Barcelona players up. Everyone's like, what's going on? And I think that's what makes the first half so incredibly open. Yeah. But the Lamine Yamal goal that you've just described in very modest terms, a bit like the goal he scores in the Euros. It's not quite as good a strike in terms of what happens. But the thing is that's similar is he picks the ball up with nothing really on. He picks the ball up in that area and he's like, best do it myself then. And there's been a couple of frustrating moments for Barcelona at this point. They're 2-0 down. Everyone's like, what is going on? We should at least have one back already. How have we conceded twice? He goes, fine, I'm 17, but I'll do it. And he just goes on this mazy dribble. And the lack of backlift on the striker as he clips it into the far corner is absurd. It's absurd what he does in this moment. So for me, that's the best goal of the night from the player of the night, which is really harsh on Denzel Dumfries, who scored twice and got an assist from right wing back. But I don't think you can look. And he got man of the match. He was officially awarded player of the match, Denzel Dumfries.
Good.
But I feel like it's deeply unfair that you can watch that game and not come away with the idea that, as you said earlier, Lamine Yamal might just not be the best young player in the world. He might just be the best player in the world.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan, as he got home, and you know, I was trying to describe it to him, he goes, wow, that's crazy, Dad, because Lamine Yamal is not even an adult, is he? I was like, that's such a good way of like just breaking it down for what it is. It's like, no, he hasn't. And then he said, Dylan said, why is his hair this colour? I was like, oh, he got bored in his hotel room. Again, a very childish thing to do. Get bored, change the colour of your hair. A lot of people did that when they were 17. Bet you did.
I did it about mid-20s, I think.
The old sun in. But yeah, I mean, I think I'd still have Thuram at one just for what it, like, it was crazy. I'd actually have Thuram 1, Rafinha 2, Yamal at 3, I think. Yeah. But there's no right order here. That's why I was interested to see how you saw it, because I didn't have any friends to talk to while I was watching the game.
No wonder you were so keen to get this going. I got a text from Dean being like, let's get this show on the road. And
this
I was
is
like,
the chat I needed. Okay. Trust me, I needed to talk about this.
I was trying to catch my breath, and Dean was like, I need to talk. I
watch a lot of football, right? And as you do. And most of the time, I'm just used to kind of just keeping it in my head or jotting down notes on my phone so I remember how I felt at the time to talk about it on the Patreon on a Monday when we go through all the games, things like that. But today wasn't one of those days. This has got to come out. And thanks for giving me this outlet and let me come on your podcast.
You're very welcome, mate. You're very welcome. I think the thing is that it was one of those games that you can't really talk about. Like, often when we do these Champions League, you know, takeaway podcasts straight afterwards, we work our way through the game. We didn't really last night because I think it was about narrative as much as anything else. This game felt too chaotic to kind of start at the beginning and work your way through. But
no.
We do our best to kind of...
We've done a ranking, so we've done something like that.
Yeah, like we kind of cover all the bases. But I mean, again, a bit like yesterday is one of those ones where the away team come out and stun a crowd who are so expectant early on. But I think in a way that Arsenal as a players didn't really. Barcelona were kind of like, no, surely they can't do that to us. Like, they almost like looked to the ref to be like, hang on, like, are they allowed to do that? Like, is that,
we
is
started. That, are we normally started? Still, have we definitely started the game?
Exactly. It's like one of those ones where you're like 3-0 down at 5-a-side and you're like, right, should we start properly?
Should we start again? Yeah, should we start properly? So-and-so didn't have his laces done up. Can we start again?
But like that, kind of, it was like a shell shock around the place. And it's normally, I think, because Barcelona start so fast. Look back to the Copa del Rey at the weekend. And the way that Barcelona started that game, they looked like they were going to run Real Madrid off the park in the first half. And yeah, obviously things changed in the second and you know, the game played out as it did. But like, I think they looked at this and were like, ooh. But equally, Inter must have looked at it and gone, right, diagonal ball over the fullback. Yeah. It's going to be the place where we can get joy here. I don't think even they would have expected it to work first time in quite the way it did.
No. Look, if you were to go and ask a defensive coach to watch this game, they'll be pulling their hair out. It was not a great example of how you... defend
it was
in the Champions
League. Kamikaze football at times.
Yeah, it was not good. But that's what made it such a great game. And yeah, I think when the analysis is out from this game, that a lot will be said for how Barcelona defended in this game. Yes, they've showed a lot of courage. They've fought their way back into the game, and they can definitely be proud of the way that they've played. But the defending was bordering on atrocious at times, probably.
I mean, it's probably worth pointing out that obviously Jules Koundé goes off early in this game, which is a big blow to Barcelona. He's a key
sounds
part
like it could be bad as well, yeah.
You know, obviously then you get one change and then Eric Garcia comes in at right back, who is a perfectly capable footballer and has had a good season, but equally, one, is not a right back, and two, doesn't possess the same physical qualities that Jules Koundé does. And then they kind of have to switch it around. Obviously, they're already missing first choice left back in Alejandro Balde.
Yeah.
So at that point, they then bring Araujo into the game and, or Araujo, sorry, I'm in Portuguese mode rather than Spanish, but they bring in Araujo into the game. He goes into centre back, which forces Iñigo Martinez wide. I think that they're never as good when Iñigo isn't in there because of the way that he calls the line for everyone else. And I think Araujo is a slightly different player in the way that he is kind of a front foot first defender. He isn't quite as commanding in terms of the way that he operates the line.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, to kind of add to all of it, Barcelona use that left flank a lot and Rafinha drifts inside. And it's one of the reasons that when Balde isn't there, they look a little bit more, one, susceptible going backwards because of his recovery speed, but also they look less dangerous because the balls into the box from those areas aren't the same. And I think that we saw that in the second half when Iñigo's out on that left wing, he doesn't have the same whip of delivery, right? He doesn't have that same slide-in ball that you're looking for there that Barcelona love attacking in the box, because in trying to get into that kind of corridor of uncertainty, if you will, there isn't the same kind of elements of that. So whilst the defending was suspect, I don't think anyone's going to see it.
Apart from the Kubasi bit at the end, like there was that block he made, Kubasi.
Even that was suspect because he shouldn't have allowed him through.
It was late, late intervention, sure, but he did do well.
He did brilliantly to come back, absolutely. I'm not trying to talk down on the tackle, but you know, realistically, you should probably be reading that and not letting Marcus Thuram get in behind because he's the player that's going to try and damage you in those areas. So I think even the most ardent Barcelona fan would sit here and be like, okay, the defending wasn't great today. Like there are some circumstances around that I think make it more, it doesn't make it better because you've still got to do better, but I think it makes it more understandable why those things, I think, and in the second half, from my money, that got a lot worse. And I don't think it's a shock that those changes happened. And then those balls started going in behind where Inter looked like they had the capacity to actually score every time they did go on the break. And I kind of want to flip this. We've talked a lot about Barcelona because there's been so much joy watching them play football. But Inter have actually come out here with the better result. They will know that Barcelona have not beaten them in Milan for a long, long time. And also they will feel that if this game opens up again in the same way, they will be able to cause the same kind of damage that they did in this game. Now, that's not to say that it's, you know, impossible that Barcelona go in there and blow them away, because those chances did come and the amount of woodwork hits, etc. But I think that Inter will be the happier of the two sides in terms of players on the pitch, maybe not rather than fan bases, considering the way that it's ended in such a health, especially after such a helter-skelter first half.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Inter showed such a unity in this game. And as a collective, I thought they were superb. Now, I'll be honest, at 2-0, I'm like, they're just going to shut up shop now. This actually might make this into a dull game. I wanted them to go 1-0 up because I wanted Barca to have to really work hard to get their moments. But at 2-0, I was like, oh, like Inter, this is what they want to do. They want to just now defend, and they're very good at just defending. But there was a bit more to it. I think one thing that we've obviously seen, so Inter Milan obviously had a really bad time coming into this game, lost three games, not scored a goal. But Dumfries and Thuram haven't been around for Inter Milan recently, and suddenly they're back in the frame, and this is the difference. And I'd kind of forgotten that. I think that element of this was kind of lost on me in the build-up to the game. And I'd really played down Inter's chances. I mean, a lot of people played down Inter's chances. But those two obviously turned out to be significant game changers for Inter in the way that they could approach this team, particularly in the way they would transition. So that was extremely interesting that they were able to play in that way and make it such an entertaining game. I don't expect Inter Milan games to be entertaining. And they've just played one of the best matches I've ever seen in my life. Are we going to get that in the second leg? you wouldn't have thought so. but Barca have got to go there and score. So they've got to go and take the game to Inter anyway, because they don't want this just dragging out goalless, 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 and then Inter hit them with a 1-0.
It won't, like, as in Barcelona went out for that. So like, no. It's a bit like when people were like, we're talking about this, and they were like, well, PSG could now hold out a 0-0 at the Parc des Princes. They might just, you know, just stifle Arsenal. I was like, there's absolutely zero way that PSG don't set out to go and score and kill the game, right? Like, it's just not in their DNA. It's not in their nature under this management. Whereas, and I think very similarly for Barcelona. Now, maybe it's slightly different in the fact that they don't have a lead, but the flip side of that is it kind of didn't matter. If Barcelona were 3-0 up, I think they'd go and try and score a couple. You know, I really do think that there might be changes. They might rotate a bit. But I think at this point, you're kind of looking at it and thinking, well, I know what Barcelona are going to do. They're going to try and suffocate Inter. And we'll talk a little bit about that and the actual press in a minute when we come back after the break. But there was no world where they didn't go, you know, they didn't go out, even 2-3-0 up if that had happened, that they didn't go out and try and push Inter again. So I think we will get an entertaining second leg in the same way. It's actually more of a question how Inter try and play it, I think, than how Barcelona try and play it, because we know what they're going to try and do. It's just a question of whether you can stop it. And tonight, Inter did just that, not in terms of stopping them scoring, but making them pay for their mistakes at the other end of the pitch. So we're going to take a little break there and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC, looking back at a wild encounter at Montjuic between Barcelona and Inter that ended 3-3. First leg done and dusted, second leg next week at San Siro at the Giuseppe Meazza. Going to be a very, very entertaining one, I think. Dean, where do you want to go next with this?
Well, I just want to, like, something we haven't really mentioned is the fact that Barcelona went and played like this and with this intensity and energy just days after a Clásico Copa del Rey final, which they managed to win in extra time. Like, that is also incredible. I think that one of the things in the early stages of this game I was thinking about, so they go, obviously, 2-0 down. I'm like, okay, so what we're seeing here perhaps is a lack of experience from Barca and maybe a lot of experience from Inter Milan of how to manage a game like this, but also maybe they are feeling the fatigue of that energy physically and mentally that went into the Real Madrid game. And obviously that all goes out the window because like they managed to take it all the way and come back twice to end the game level. That takes a lot of doing. I'm also, there's the fact that Lamine Yamal is 17, has played 100 games. I don't know that that's okay. I'm a bit worried about this. And obviously, in the warm-up to this game, in the build-up, there was all this fear that Lamine had gone off in the warm-up, kind of holding his groin a little bit. And, I mean, Micah Richards on the CBS commentary like was basically crying. He's like, don't tell me we've just been robbed of Lamine Yamal for a game like this.
To be fair, vindication post-game. He was like, you can't have... Imagine if we'd been robbed of that.
Oh my goodness. Exactly. So, yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there, that what it takes to play at this, like as a normal human being, we couldn't last 5 minutes in that intensity, right? These are athletes of such superior elite level at Barcelona. I'm just talking to them because of the game ahead at the weekend, that they've gone and done a Clásico final has taken everything to win. And then they've gone into this and done it again. That's just incredible to me.
So earlier today on the radio, I interviewed Pau Bayús, who is the Barcelona correspondent for The Athletic. And I asked him this question. Basically, I was like, are you a bit concerned that it might have taken it out of them? You know, not only the physical demands of playing 120 minutes in that kind of atmosphere and also against the Real Madrid side who clearly upped the intensity in the second half, but also the emotional come down from winning that Copa del Rey Clásico, knowing what's in store, knowing what's ahead, where does that all kind of come together? And he said he was deeply worried about the fact that there was so many minutes in the legs of so many players as well right now. But the flip side of that was, he was like, I think they are now just playing with their hearts. I don't think their bodies are even getting enough time to recover. So they're just going straight back out and being like, we'll just do it again. Some players like this, right? It is worth pointing this out. Some players want momentum more than recovery. And I think it obviously depends a bit on how old you are. It all depends on how many injuries you've had, how susceptible you are to injuries, all of that. But I think that there is a feeling with this Barcelona team, it's just like, keep giving us games. Like, we need to keep playing. If we, it's, you know, like when you go on like a couple of weekends away and then you're like,
no, you go on all the weekends away, mate. Not me. I'm past it.
Remember 30 years ago when you used to go on weekends away, you do that and you're like, oh wow, I've got to do another one. You do it. You got to do another one. When you come back and you're like, wow, I've got a couple of weeks off, then you get sick. Happens every time. You get sick.
Oh yeah. Oh, always happens to me. Yeah, every time. Yep. Yep.
And I think it's your body being like, right, okay, we've got through like the bit. Is now there is time for me to actually. And I think that Barcelona might be a bit in this stage. They're like, they've just got to keep coming. They have to keep going because it is now a question of getting to the end of the season. And obviously, if you play this many games, it's been a relatively small rotation. You know, a lot of players obviously went down with serious injuries relatively earlier in the season. You're looking at those kind of elements of it. But, you know, when you're looking at the kind of players that he utilizes, Hansi Flick, there's what, 16, 17, maybe 18 at a push that are quite regularly within this rotation. That's a lot of minutes for a relatively small group of players. But they feel like they are running on like emotion at this point and also just pure belief in what they're doing. And that I think is very different because, you know, you talk about the bounce back from Barcelona. I would flip that as well on the other side. And I think that, you know, both of these things deserve immense credit. Mentally, for Inter to come back from what has been a period where they've been dumped out of the Coppa Italia, where they have potentially given up the league title to Napoli with a couple of really bad results in Serie A. Their dreams of a treble are pretty much crushed. And now it's kind of like, oh, are all the eggs in the Champions League basket? Part of it, I think, and I can come onto this in a bit more depth in a minute, part of it, I think, is that this kind of game where the other team are going to attack and they're kind of less expected to go out there and dominate the game, or, you know, they need the 3 points in the same way, maybe suits them a little bit more. But I think also the mental ability to be able to clear that. And Inzaghi said this before the game. He came out there and was like, we've just got to completely wipe the last week and we focus everything on this 90 minutes. And to be honest, I think they did. I think the three goals they concede are almost impossible to stop, right? Like, there's nothing you can do about Lamine Yamal jinking around four players and clipping one into the top corner. There's not much you can do about Rafinha pinging one into top bins. And if Pedri puts a pass like that across and Rafinha heads it across, like, there is not much you can do about Ferran Torres finishing it off. Everything that Inter did today that didn't end up in a Barcelona goal, they rode their luck a little bit with the woodwork hits, sure. But in terms of actually doing the things they needed to do to keep themselves alive in this game, they did everything their manager could have asked of them. They took their opportunities when they presented themselves. They scored from the crosses and set pieces that people had pointed out. They took advantage of the high line at times to be able to get in behind. I think that Inzaghi will be sitting there in the dressing room and going, okay, it's obviously frustrating that we gave up two leads, in particular a two-goal lead so early on. But sometimes you have to just put your hands up and be like, that was absolutely unbelievable from the team we were playing. I don't think he could have asked for anything more from his players tonight. And off the back of a bad period, which you mentioned earlier, that is some mental bounce back from this Inter side.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the things with Barcelona that you began talking about there was kind of like wanting to just keep playing the games and playing the games and playing the games. And I think a lot of this comes down to the fact that this team are growing up together, right? And they have a youthfulness and they've come through a pathway that is pretty rare. I mean, you look at how many players have come through the system. I mean, it just doesn't really exist across other teams that play at this level. And you get Lamine at 17, Kubasi at 18, Pedri at 22 or whatever he is now. But even the players around him who you consider to be established players, like, they're all like top end. Well, not top end, but a lot of them are like 25. And then they just have a youthfulness about them that means they're fine to keep playing because, you know, the type likes of Lamine and stuff would be playing youth team football where you don't even give it a second thought to be playing. But obviously this intensity changes it. So I think that helps Barca. And I think that makes it even more difficult in a way, maybe more impressive that Inter can compete with them. Like they can even ride the waves of momentum that a team of that type would have. Because when it's 2-2 and Barcelona are playing full of joy and full of freedom and exuberance and fearlessness, that's a scary thing to play against. Well, especially when there are so many kids on the pitch who just don't care who you are. That's the other thing that Barca do have. Like, yes, that does count sometimes. You think, oh, but they're inexperienced, but also, but they don't care. They're not burned by whatever's happened at Barcelona in the last few years, because for some of them, that they weren't even part of that. For some of them, they know it's definitely not their fault that they were involved in that. So I find that very interesting. One thing also, like, when I step back and I think about the two games that we've just watched in the last 2 days and the four teams that we've watched, I mean, when it comes to entertainment of those four teams on a club-by-club basis, there's only one that hasn't given you any joy at all, isn't there? And yeah, I'm not going to sit here and just like pour misery over Arsenal, but they don't come close so far in the over what we've seen in the first 90 minutes of this semi-final stage. They don't come close to the level that we've seen the others reach at that moment. They're still in the tie, so it doesn't really matter so much.
Yeah. Also, like, but it's not the most, it's often not the most entertaining sides that win these things.
No,
right? Like,
no, of course.
I always think back to the year that obviously Liverpool beat Tottenham in the final. And I don't want to take away from Liverpool fans, because that was a moment for them within itself, right? But I remember praying that we were going to get this Cruyff final between Ajax and Barcelona, because I was like, this will be so much fun. We'll have like all of this. It'll be really open. It'll be all over the place. And instead, we got a pretty standard victory for Liverpool over Spurs that was bookended by two goals and didn't really feel like there was any jeopardy in it whatsoever. It always felt like it was going one way. And like, as much as I think a neutral will be crying out for the chaos that would be a Barcelona versus PSG final, they're often not the teams that win it. They're often the teams that win hearts along the way, but they're also often the teams that can be undone in these semi-finals by someone who is, you know, well-drilled feels like such an, you know, such an inferior thing to say about a team, right? Like, and I don't really mean it like that, because Inter were unbelievable at points tonight, and the way that they defend their box is sensational. I've been singing their praises kind of all year long, but like sometimes you come up against something and you're like, okay, is that the most fun outcome? No. But actually, have they just been taught a little bit of a lesson in terms of just how to manage a game, how to sit out, how to take advantage of your strengths and not expound all of your energy doing a certain element of something? Yeah, sometimes that happens. And that, I think, is the thing that you can often go back to when you're kind of dreaming of these neutrals perfect finals, that it doesn't often work like that for a reason. And I suppose that, you know, what it comes on to is, you know, you're looking at this Inter side who have, as you say, had a bad couple of weeks of it, who have really struggled to get themselves going. Yes, a few key players came back tonight, but actually in these kind of ties, this is kind of what they're built for. These are kind of the games that you're looking at and going, this is why you put it all together. This is why you put the experience in there. You know, when you're looking at it, you're going, 37-year-old Acerbi, how are you going to stand up against this lightning quick, you know, playing passes off a sixpence Barcelona attack?
Yeah.
But they did. It might have not been pretty. It might have been bodies in front of the ball. It might have been, you know, two players get beaten and the third just happens to be in the way. But you survive. And I would probably apply the same thing to what Arsenal did yesterday. You survive sometimes when things aren't going your way. I was listening to Ian Wright earlier talking about the game, you know, directly recording afterwards. And he was basically like, I didn't think Arsenal were brave enough. And I kind of take that point. But also I think that, you know, just throwing it all at the wall in the last 10 minutes might have undone them at that point. So I can kind of see where it's coming from. And I think that there were points today where Barcelona were camped around the edge of the Inter box for like 5-10 minutes at a time. And you're kind of thinking, why are Inter not trying to break? Why are they just, and they're just like, just survive this 10 minutes and we'll win a free kick and we'll move up the box after we've managed to just allow for it. And sometimes it feels like you're being suffocated and all you need to do is just hang in there until it passes, until the storm goes over. And I thought Inter did that really well.
Yeah. while we're talking, I've just checked my Twitter from when I was tweeting during the game, and it turns out one of the tweets has gone a little bit mad. So obviously Inter Milan did score another goal. Mkhitaryan scored, and there was an offside call on it. And he was offside by literally a toe. And there was a crazy image that you probably have all seen by now of the offside decision. And it's as fine a margin as you can get. And I just tweeted, when they introduced offside in football, this is definitely not what they had in mind. Obviously, people have taken that. So you're not saying it's offside? Oh, so it doesn't matter. It's like, no, that's literally not my point. My point is, like, this is not why offside was invented. Like, so unlucky, basically. I'm just like, that's so unlucky that it's that marginal that now defines a semi-final being won or not won by Inter Milan. Like, he hasn't even mistimed his run. He's level with him. It's just like that split second that they've taken that image, his knee isn't as far up as his toe. Like, it's not even a second's difference between the next frame where the knee is in front of the toe and he's no longer offside. That's what is so crazy about offside decisions now, and how unfortunate. The ball that Thuram puts in there for Mkhitaryan to stick it away is beautiful. Like, I loved it. But that was so close, mate. It's funny because actually, in real time, I actually thought, oh, he's offside, he's gone too early. So did I wasn't you? That surprised. Yeah, I wasn't that surprised.
I was like, absolutely no chance whatsoever.
Oh, really? Off. I thought he was off. Yeah, it looked to me like he was further ahead than he was.
I was stunned that the lino put the flag up so quickly. I mean, I know that they check it, and like, it doesn't really matter because, yeah. Like,
doesn't,
you know,
really,
whether the
lineman
puts
it anyway,
his flag up or not, they're going to check it. But I was like, wow, he really thinks that's offside. Like, he's not a, ooh, maybe.
But he hasn't seen that, has he? He's not.
He can't see that.
He can't see that. That's the thing. And that's what I'm kind of talking about in the tweet. Like, nobody could ever have seen this until this era of technology. But I don't think anyone ever wanted to see this, did they? Like, don't you want to see, like, it used to be like advantage to the attacker because we want to see goals. And now it's like, absolutely no chance. Like, if you, this is as close as you can get to a call. Like, it's offside. I'm not saying they got the decision wrong. They haven't, because this is how football is now. And loads of, I'm not even going to read the responses on this because it's going to put me in a bad mood for the rest of the day. But yeah, that's how people are interpreting it. That's not what I meant. It's just that it's really gone to another level. And Inter Milan were so, so close to getting that win to take back to Italy with them.
100%. I mean, look, fine margins, right? I've always kind of believed, I think I always believed until I was about 16 years old, that the advantage should go to the attacker. And then I remember the goal that Atletico scored against Fulham in the final, where Sergio Aguero is offside when he pokes it over to Diego. I mean, I was like, I've always been a staunch advocate of VAR.
This is the thing. You're on the side, whatever suits you on the day, for sure. Cool. And it's fine. Like, that's football, right? But this is, you know, VAR was supposed to take all debate out of the game, and like, at least it hasn't done that. I guess we still sit here and go through it all every week.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think with offsides, there is obviously a frustration in terms of when it's really, really close, they're all going to stop. But like, at least with offside, there is a clear cut yes or no.
That's the thing. The Inter players, they can't complain. Like, if it's offside, it's offside. They could be like, oh my god, how is that not a goal? Like, that's so close. But they're not berating the referee saying, well, you should give it because it's close enough. Like, they haven't got that argument anymore.
It's weird because I've just seen Mkhitaryan's answers about this, right?
Oh, okay. So
he just says, I feel very gutted. Unfortunately, maybe it was 2 or 3 centimeters. This is football and you can't do anything about it. My will was too much to score this goal. Maybe I rushed offside. I hope to score in the second leg. Love that. It's just like, get with it.
Exactly.
Like,
I mean, that's the thing. That's exactly what it is. You can't do anything about it. He hasn't really done anything wrong. Like, I don't. It's not really a mistimed run if your toe's offside, is it? Like, blimey. Imagine how many goals would have been ruled out throughout history that were important if we could go back and correct it all with VAR. It'd be crazy.
Simone Inzaghi would have loved it because his brother would have got far less of the limelight. The man who was famously born offside, I think the phrase is. I mean, look, you look back at it, let's try and wrap this up a little bit. It's been a strange one. Yesterday, after coming out of the Arsenal PSG game, I was like, are we going to fill this? I don't know how much, you know, how much we've actually got to discuss. And it turns out there was loads and loads to talk about it. This one was so breathless that it felt that you could talk about every single minute of the game in detail to the point where you were doing a podcast that was 90 minutes long. And yet I'm like, I feel like I've expounded all my energy watching it as much as talking about it. And so it's a kind of strange capacity to be like, so much happened and yet we're back kind of at square one. I know it's not quite like that because, you know, halftime at the tie is always a little bit skewed because one team becomes a home team, etc. I don't think Barcelona are going to adapt their style whatsoever. And part of the reason that I've loved watching them this week, I did a deep dive on Barcelona's tactics a little while back on the podcast, on the Patreon. And one of the things we talked about on that was the fact that they're not afraid to concede goals, this Barcelona. I think that when you look back to the iteration under Xavi, possession was utilized as a tool to control the game, yes, but also as a defensive mechanism so that you wouldn't concede. And we talk about that with Pep, right, quite a lot, that you're like, the other team cannot score if you have the ball. But I think what's refreshing about watching this Barcelona and where Hansi Flick has got it right in terms of making them step up as a unit is he's like, okay, you're going to make mistakes. Most of the time, though, we're going to have more in the tank than anybody else. And that makes them probably the most exciting side to watch in football for all of their faults, which they have, you know, but also the joy that they expound when they're playing football, because, you know, watching them in full flight is truly quite astounding. And there were moments tonight. It wasn't a perfect performance from Barcelona by any stretch of the imagination. I thought it was sloppy in the first 15 minutes of the second half. I thought that there were, you know, periods where they lost all control of the game and even, you know, wanting to turn it into a slightly transitional, direct up and down game, which does normally suit them. You know, they lost control of being able to put that in the perspective. And yet I come out of it being like, wow, Pedri should have done better for the header, but what a performance in the middle. I come out of it thinking, when do I get to see Lamine Yamal play football again? I'm like, can we have more of Rafinha shooting rounds out of the box in every game I ever watch, please? You're kind of thinking about it and thinking, there were still some absolutely stunning performances in there. I loved watching it. And yet I can't help but feel that Inter have come out the better of this game in a game that I didn't think they played. They defended really well as a unit. And from a mental perspective to actually take advantage of those situations, I couldn't be more impressed. But in terms of 90 minutes of general play, who are you pointing out in that game, you know, from an Inter perspective, apart from Thuram and Dumfries, and going, yeah, absolutely exceptional tonight? Because I don't think there was loads.
No, there wasn't really. No, you're right. I'm just looking at the lineup quickly as you said that. Barella at times.
I thought Barella looked a bit shabby.
He had a couple of moments where he was just a bit loose when I wouldn't expect it. That's true. Sommer made some good saves, to be fair.
Jan Sommer, I'll continue to insist.
The low free kick dive save I thought was great because I don't think many people would have anticipated that that's where it was going to go.
It was also like holding on to a couple where there were Barcelona players closing in a rate of knots, I thought was very impressive. And the way he dealt with those centres from Lamine Yamal, which were causing all sorts of problems, I don't get me wrong, but he got something to all of them. And I think that as it in itself was a huge step forward for Inter because it wasn't falling at Barcelona players' feet.
Yeah, I'm just remembering, like, as you're talking about Lamal then, I'm just remembering one, that outside of the boot kind of cross he had that was like disguised, which was, I need to see again.
I didn't even see the player in the box until the ball had left his foot. I was like, who the hell is it? Oh, hi.
It was like an optical illusion. I was like, that was bizarre. And then there's the high chip that hits the crossbar.
So I sent one of the most chaotic sets of text messages I've ever sent. After that, I texted Sam saying he definitely didn't mean that. He can't have meant that. Maybe he did mean that. I think he probably meant that. And then was like,
he 100% meant that.
He was looking for his empty moment.
It was astonishing that he tried that and it nearly came off because I do think he meant it. I can't stop thinking about the display that we saw from him, to be honest. Let's wrap it up. Let's rank the best to worst final we could possibly see from here. I'll go first. Worst final we could possibly see, Inter Milan v Arsenal. Mm-hmm. then Barcelona v Arsenal, then Inter v PSG. The best final we could see is Barca v PSG, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. From a, like, I think
just
obviously
from a neutral, like,
just
a,
yeah, exactly. Like, obviously, if you support any of these teams, you're gonna be like, "What's going on?" Like obviously, that doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
I think from a neutral perspective, I think that PSG against Inter would probably be a better game than Barcelona versus Arsenal, purely because I think that Inter would find it very interesting coming up against this PSG attack and trying to deal with that from that kind of tactical perspective. Whereas I think that Arsenal would have, to be honest, I think if Arsenal get through to the final, they've got a real puncher's chance against either of the two teams they come up against. I think that because there are flaws to both of their games, but I think that where they, you know, where PSG are right now, there is a level of kind of control that they're exerting upon games. So maybe I would flip that. Maybe actually for a neutral, I would say Barcelona Arsenal might be a bit more chaotic than a PSG against Inter, because as much as PSG like to mix things around, I think that they would play with a level of ball control that actually maybe sucked the life a little bit out of that game.
Yeah.
And I think you could probably point to that game yesterday against Arsenal whilst there were chances for both sides. Like it was nowhere near as chaotic or as open as this one. And if you can be chaotic and open against Inter, and if Barcelona can, then I think PSG probably can do as well.
Yeah.
So that's maybe why I would put them in that order. But yeah, I think it might just be because Barcelona are so incredibly watchable, and that is because they are flawed as much as they are brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. But whatever's in store, mate, whoever does make it to the final is going to be deserving to be there, because these are cracking semi-finals. And It's been an unbelievable season in the Champions League. Every single time we've sat here, pretty much, something has amazed us. I can't think of many boring game weeks that we've had. And I'm just glad that we're into a stage where both games are still evenly poised. There's still loads to play for, and we're still going to be surprised in the second legs.
Yeah, absolutely. Two more Champions League takeaways to come next week. It's going to be a whole lot of fun as we see who comes out victorious in these two relatively evenly balanced ties at the halfway point. But I think we'll take that opportunity to wrap this up. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. Thank you all so much for listening to this Champions League takeaway. It's been a bit chaotic, but then so was the game. So we're just doing our best to mirror what's going on the pitch. Sam and Doogie will be back on Friday with a truth where they're talking about whether this was a fun or a not fun Premier League season, whether it's weaker or stronger, and where Premier League sits in the greater European pantheon. So loads to get stuck into in that episode as well. But for now, from us, we'll see you very, very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.